A Playlist Original.
Welcome to the Pilot Podcast,
where we watch the pilot episodes of TV shows and answer your question, should I watch this?
My name is BJ.
And my name is Me Too.
And this week, we're checking out Clarice on CBS, The Equalizer on CBS, Bell Collective on OWN, and Firefly Lane on Netflix.
So stay tuned to the end to find out if BJ is secretly an agent.
Well, I don't think they would be able to find out.
Oh man, I guess that one can't be revealed. Well, Beach, there is more we can reveal on CBS's Clarice. Why don't you let us know what happened?
Sure. So Clarice is our new show that is set in the world of The Silence of the Lambs. And it's actually set 1 year after that story in 1993. And now we're diving into the personal story of Clarice Starling, played by Rebecca Breeds. And this is her returning to the field, and she is brought in because she's really good at pursuing serial killers. So she's trying to find all of these murderers and sexual predators while working in Washington, D.C. And this all stems from her rescuing Catherine Martin. And so she's recruited by Catherine's mother, Attorney General Ruth Martin, played by Jane Atkinson. And she is joining a new violent criminal apprehension program. And on this team, she's working with Agent Paul Krindler, played by Michael Koldlitz. And they are, let's just say, butting heads.
Paul and the Attorney General, Ruth, want her to say that there's another serial killer on the loose in DC. She is very famous a year later after having saved Catherine Martin, played by Marnie Carpenter from Buffalo Bill. And people were horrified, including Clarice, by what Buffalo Bill produced, but horrified in that way that drives, I guess, people's obsession with true crime. She's a star in that sense. And Ruth wants her to extend that stardom and keep shining a light on this potential serial killer in DC.
Exactly. And it's really interesting to see her basically be a PR hire. They really just want to show her face, use her recognition with the news and reporters. And all they want from her is to say, there's a serial killer. That's literally the only line they want from her.
But the problem is they didn't anticipate that she actually was the perfect hire. So they plied her with lines saying that she is an expert. She figured out what happened with Buffalo Bill. She was able to face Hannibal Lecter. I guess we won't give Silence of the Lambs spoilers, but she actually is the perfect candidate to their detriment. So she immediately realizes that this isn't a traditional, if you want to say, unhinged serial killer. This might be a more method-based series of murders with intentional targets, and the roots may not be insanity, as she said on the show, because it's very dated language, but it actually might be for some sort of purpose and maybe even some corporate malpractice.
She's definitely committed to her job, to their detriment, where if they bring her on the scene, she doesn't want to just stand around. She is curious about the case. She's curious about what's happened to these victims. And she is genuinely trying to solve the mystery and not just put out a story to satisfy the Attorney General.
This show is really dark, and the roots of the show are really dark. So I wonder how you feel about the fact that she herself isn't an anti-hero, as we often see on shows like this. Rather, her intentions are quite pure. She is seemingly being set up as the good person to counteract all of the nefarious intentions of the people around her.
I actually like having her be this excellent mystery solver because they don't make her all around perfect. She's definitely genuinely good. She's pure of heart, but she also has these mental health struggles. She is suffering from PTSD. She's traumatized and refuses to talk to Catherine, who also wants to discuss the trauma with her. I think that struggle, in combination with her excellent work skills, makes her an appealing character.
Initially, before you made that point, in my mind, I was thinking that this character felt really one note, and it's not the fault of the actor. I thought the writing just made her too good. Her struggles with mental health and talking about PTSD and talking about the fact that she endured this trauma and seeing the aftermath of that does complicate her character a bit. And the relationship dynamic I am most interested in is between her and Catherine, because when Catherine is able to reach her, she says that they are one and the same, and those two are the only people that they can trust.
I'm sure after going through that experience, Catherine feels some sort of bond because she is thinking, hey, Clarice is the only one who truly understands, or literally understands, what happened to me.
She also had a great line where she said, do you remember what you first said to me when you rescued me? And at the same time, they said, FBI, you're safe. And she said, that was a lie. We've never been safe. And that made me interested in both their dynamic, but also what's to come. Catherine is the daughter of the Attorney General. She tells Clarice to be suspicious of her, and we don't see anything in the episode yet for us to be too suspicious of the Attorney General, but I am suspicious of her now.
There's a lot of foreshadowing in that one line. And even Clarice was surprised when she was recruited specifically by the Attorney General to hunt down this supposed serial killer. So from the beginning, we know that there must be some greater plan for Clarice.
Do you want to keep watching the show to see the greater plan for Clarice on CBS?
I think I would watch again casually. I really like the character interactions. I think the actual cases, the murder mysteries, were somewhat generic, but the backstory and the relationships between Clarice and everyone around her. We also didn't have time to dive into her friend Ardelia Matt, played by Devon Tyler. I think there's some cool history that they could unpack there. I'd keep watching. What about you?
I forgot about the Black best friend on the show.
Supportive Black best friend.
Yes. She... I guess there's more to see there, too. If you're looking for a crime show and a procedural, you'll probably enjoy Clarice. If you're looking for a continuation of the Silence of the Lambs movies that is on that scale, in the same way that people are finding satisfaction from WandaVision for being a great continuation of the movies, you won't find that in this show. I think it's a procedural above anything else. For me, I don't think I'm going to watch many more episodes because it was just a little too gruesome. I don't like horror movies, and there were scenes of the things that Buffalo Bill did to his victims, and they just grossed me out too much.
That's fair. So how about we go from something gross to another continuation where we have CBS rebooting another franchise?
Okay, you're talking about Equalizer on CBS. This show centers around veteran and retired nonprofit head Robin McCall, played by Queen Latifah, and she is a former spy who is asked by an old friend, William, played by Chris Noth, to work on a private security case involving a server on the run. Rounding out Robin's ragtag investigative team is her sharpshooter army buddy Melody, played by Liza Lapira, and super hacker Harry, played by Adam Goldberg. She is also a single mom to Delilah, played by Layla DeLeon Hayes, and her aunt V, played by the incomparable Lorraine Toussaint, looks after both Robin and Delilah.
So, Meetu, were you already familiar with the Equalizer franchise?
I wasn't. I didn't know that it was an 80s reboot. I had seen one of the Denzel movies. I think there's more than one.
Yes.
But I don't fully remember the plot. I believe the Equalizer is someone who looks out for others who don't have means in whatever sense to protect themselves. So they are literally equalizers.
Yes, they are trying to equal the playing field for all those people out there, take down these rich, powerful people who are taking advantage of those without those same resources.
Okay, so I got it.
You understand everything. I know, because you're... I knew you would. You're smart like that.
Okay.
It doesn't take long for you to catch on.
I'm so glad I could understand the concept of the CBS procedural. I really appreciate this test of strength. Mensa, call me.
Let's dive into the highlight of the Equalizer franchise, why CBS wanted to add a procedural like this to their lineup. And that's the action, the tension, the drama. How'd you feel about Queen Latifah as an action hero?
I loved it. First thing I want to say before we get into the action, Queen Latifah has never had a bad hair day. She's never had a bad skin day. She's always had wonderful makeup. There's a reason she's a cover girl. Look it up, people. Whenever her hair or whatever looks wild, it's for a role. Otherwise, that woman is perfect. Now let's talk about the action scenes. There is a scene where she gets on a motorcycle and she extracts someone from the back of a police van in a heist, I would say. I jumped up from my couch and started clapping when I saw her roll up and beat the van driver up to get the person out of the van. It was awesome. I loved seeing that.
So I'm going to do a pro and a con when I talk about the action.
Okay, good luck finding a con.
Which one do you want me to start with?
The con.
Okay, the con. As our listeners know, we watch a lot of TV. So we understand a bit of the TV magic part that puts shows together.
Okay.
In this episode, she's rescuing this high school student named Jewel, who's going through some trouble after witnessing a crime. And when she first meets Jewel, she has to fight off some human traffickers. When someone does their own stunts, so sub to the con, there's a pro. Queen Latifah was doing these action scenes for the most part. Sometimes when someone maybe doesn't have all those fighting skills, you do a lot of cuts. Quick cuts, different angles, flashes of light. You don't really see that. They're not moving too much or kicking or punching too much. So I was a little disappointed that they used the editing to make it seem like a lot was happening, when realistically she was just kind of standing there punching people.
I'm going to go ahead and add time to this episode in our overall time block so I can take time to tear this apart. BJ,
I got to do my pro as well.
The Equalizer is for adults. This is not a young person show. If you want to watch...
I have seen the Equalizers before you.
Some Gen Z youth sprinting across and punching and doing their own fight scenes. Cool.
I'm not Gen Z. Gen Z doesn't fight. Millennials do the action.
If you want to see some young millennial do some fighting and action scenes, cool. That's great for you. What the rest of us are here for are the Equalizer. And the Equalizer is a woman of a certain age, unlike allegedly the male stars who are her age, who do their own stunts, but also with a lot of things to steroids. We're seeing someone just handle everything that's coming her way. And everything she did looks like if I had to fight off three people.
It does look like if you had to fight off three people. You know what? I'm glad you said that, because I will give you that. If you started this show, it would look just like this.
No, it doesn't look like what I would do, because you know I'm more wily than that. And honestly, I would not have followed anyone to go save them. I would have called someone to go save them, and I would have pretended to go to sleep so that no one would touch me.
You know, that also sounds very true. I do want to say one of the pros is with Queen Latifah's acting, one of the important parts of being an action hero is the confidence to sell that they really are pretending to be a lawyer, sneaking into places, beating up bad guys. And I think she's able to really dive in and be that character. So even though I see through the editing, I still believe her as someone who would be this badass character.
And the reason you know that, the reason you believe the characters she's portraying, is because she's an Oscar-nominated actor.
I never said she was not a good actor. I said the editing reveals they weren't doing much during these fights.
Well, then, name the person you have a beef with more clearly. So whoever is editing the show, BJ does not like your work.
That is not what I'm saying. To be honest, the person I don't like is the character Harry. I always have a problem with super awesome computer hackers who just sit there and do anything. And it also makes no sense to have a full monitor in front of you and then a wall of TV showing the exact same thing. Who is that for?
I didn't understand that either. If you're some super hacker who can hack into the dark web and the black market or whatever all these things are, would you want giant monitors displaying the things that you're doing? Or would you want maybe a sensible 13-inch laptop that you can tuck toward yourself as you hack the mainframe?
Right. You'd want one of those privacy screens so people can't look over your shoulder. When Robin first came to talk to Harry, he literally had this giant wall of credit card numbers just flashing up there. So I have a problem with Harry.
What did he say? He's said, a bank asked me to figure out if I could hack them, and I did. All these people's financial information is just on a movie screen in front of strangers. So, Beach, what do you see next for Robin? Her daughter is a little bit rebellious. Her aunt is helping to hold it down at home. Through helping Jewel in every sense, I don't think it's a surprise in a CBS procedural that the good outweighed the bad.
Mm-hmm.
She has now discovered that even though she's no longer in the military, she still wants to help people as much as possible. What do you see next for her on this journey?
So they've clearly set up her new team with Mel and Harry, and I see her eventually taking down some bigger organization. It seems like they all realize that when they worked for the government, they weren't always doing the right thing. And I think that might come back where they're going to have to face some of those people they either worked with or worked against and take them down again, while every week she saves someone who needs help.
That's juicy. So do you want to watch more episodes of that?
I would watch this again while cooking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really in it for the action. So I think the story is secondary to me. So let me do some cooking, look over, see her punch and kick, ride another motorcycle. I like when she does her outfit changes to be a new person. So I'm in. What about you?
I'm going to watch again casually. I just moved, listeners. I have many things to unpack and pack and donate and store and this and that. And that show will be the perfect thing to watch while I do that. All right, Beach. So let's go from secret agents to woman bosses with The Bell Collective.
So this is a reality series on OWN set in Jackson, Mississippi, and we're looking at female entrepreneurs. This is really giving me Real Housewives of Mississippi vibes. I feel like that's what they want to be. And the whole idea is that we're following these women who have started businesses, who are high profile in the city of Jackson, Mississippi, and they are trying to support each other, empower each other, but also take digs at each other. What were your first impressions before we kind of dive into who these girl bosses are?
Well, one said woman bosses, and I guess that makes sense because the youngest person is our age, I think.
I apologize.
Yes, your apologies. For this show, overall, and we'll get into this, the more interesting storylines were when you got to see their personalities. So the conflicts at home, the difficulties of raising their kids and running their businesses and dealing with their partners. And a lot of them were in, we'll call, difficult relationships. They also had some budding drama between each other. And they had some really nice friendships between each other to focus on positive as well. Those friendships were sweet to watch as well. The businesses, to me, were the least interesting part of it. I am impressed that these women started these lucrative careers, and a lot of them are the first Black women to be in their fields doing the things that they're doing. So that is great. But it felt very LLC Twitter energy for a television show where they were just talking about entrepreneurship, and that's great. But I don't think it makes for the fun, juicy reality show that it seems like this was hoping to convey.
And I think maybe they can get there. They might have started with such a heavy focus on their businesses, but then as the season goes on, or maybe the series goes on, they'll move away from that and really just focus on the relationship dynamics. But let's start with the woman who seems to be our main character. This whole episode is centered around her business, Leticia Pearson. She is all about planning these women empowerment brunches to bring ladies together to talk about their businesses and to support each other. And she also has a husband who is away 28 days at a time. So she is dealing with the struggles in her relationship of not always seeing her partner while she's raising her son. And another one of her big focuses is she wants to get all of her network together to revitalize a neighborhood in Jackson, Mississippi that used to be thriving with Black businesses and is now pretty empty. What were your first thoughts of Leticia?
That's one where my ears perked up was when she was talking about her relationship with her husband and the fact that he's a towboater and the fact that they have had some difficulties with their bond. I think she said that they both had some infidelities because attention comes around, as she said, since they're apart so much. That to me was the juiciest part of her storyline. For me, women's empowerment brunches are dope, but they make sense for a bit of a larger show. Meaning on Real Housewives of XYZ, they'll always have those episodes where they do the lunch or the brunch or some sort of event where they all come together and talk about their businesses and their initiatives. And that's just a feel-good part of a larger story. It can't be the center of the story.
I think there is another woman on the show who feels similar. She was questioning what is the purpose of the brunch, and that is Dr. Antoinette Lyles. She is a dentist, she's divorced, and her main storyline is that she's trying to open her own practice. What were your thoughts on her?
I don't know why we're doing just my thoughts. You can share your thoughts too. How did you feel about Dr. Lyles?
So she is one of the younger women on this cast, and I thought she was fun. She reminds me of some people we know because I happen to know a couple dentists at that stage in their life where they're trying to open their own practice or recently joined a new practice. But she didn't have too much of a storyline. I thought the one cool thing about her is that she is from Detroit and not from Jackson. So I'm curious, why move there? Probably had to do with her husband, but also why stay there after the divorce? Because it seems like she has some tension there where her dad expects her to still talk to her ex-husband, but she doesn't want to talk to him. I feel like she hasn't revealed enough, but she has potential to be an interesting person.
I agree. That was a weird note when she was FaceTiming with her dad, which is another reason I thought that she might want to return home to where she's from, since she clearly misses home and her family and is close with her family if she's FaceTiming her dad and giving him updates on the business. But I was really weirded out when he asked if she had spoken to the ex-husband. So I wonder what is there. And I think that while she wasn't particularly interesting in this first episode, she has a lot of potential to be interesting later, both with figuring out what's going on with her family and also getting to see her date.
Yeah, that could be interesting. So how about we go from Antoinette to her closest friend so far, Latrice Rogers. She is our millionaire entrepreneur starting Goddess Links Hair, doing hair vending machines. And we see that she is married to her husband for 10 years. They have a larger age gap, and he also seems to prevent her from hanging out with people sometimes, or she looks to him for approval before going and doing certain social activities.
Well, she calls him daddy, so I guess he parents her.
Your words, not mine.
She calls him daddy. The staff at her hair boutique refer to him as daddy. He is a fatherly figure. He's 20 years her senior. They started dating presumably when she was 19 or 20, if she is 29 or 30 now, and they've been together for 10 years.
And so the really cool thing is her hair business is part of the drama in this episode, because up until this point, it was just, let's meet everyone. There's this brunch coming up, but there wasn't much tension.
Yes.
And at the brunch, Marie Hamilton Abston, who runs a mental health organization, who is married for a few years, has 4 kids, has 3 grandkids, and her oldest son is 21. I'll think about the math.
Oh, all of a sudden, now we know math. But when I was talking about age differences in marriages, BJ was no longer a scientist. Okay, keep going now.
I didn't take that class that you were referring to.
Addition and subtraction.
Anyway, Marie bought some goddess length hair to make a wig, was very disappointed with the quality, and decided to bring it up at a brunch in front of a lot of people. How'd you feel about this pot stirring?
One, the jury is still out with whether Marie got the hair from Goddess Lengths.
Ooh.
To Latrice's benefit, someone sitting 2 rows down from her was like, oh, this is Goddess Lengths hair too. And it looked fantastic.
Just waving it around. That's my product.
Stiff wear. It was just flowing and bouncing and beautiful and curly. That was a tough sell for Marie. But she could have purchased Goddess Length. We just don't know yet. Two, while it was incredibly rude to bring up at what is being termed a women's empowerment brunch, it did bring necessary drama. I underlined several times in my notes, brunch is a low stakes story. I didn't understand why this whole episode was building up to a brunch. So I think they introduced the drama a little too late, but I'm glad it was there. I'm glad it paid off.
I guess it was a payoff. It was something.
It wasn't like a huge payoff. I mean, Teresa was flipping tables. In this case, she just walked away because she thought it was rude, but still, it was something.
Take what you can get.
I thought we were just going to watch them do affirmations into a mirror and then eat some eggs and other buffet breakfast foods, have maybe and single mimosa and go about their day.
It was at the country club, though. This is the spot to host a brunch.
So the last person we have is Tambra Cherie. She is a radio personality.
Midday diva.
How did you feel about her?
She seemed fun. She seems to have the biggest personality, the most energy. She's at a point where she's trying to shift her career into something bigger than just hosting her one show. She seems like she's also interested in dating. So I think that's another character along with Antoinette where it could be fun to watch her pursue new relationships and meet people. I liked her, you know? She didn't have much. She couldn't host the event. She is someone I can see getting into like a heated argument or starting some drama.
And she's a radio personality, so hopefully she'll know how to produce herself on the show in order to create a good story.
Yeah, they're already drawing some lines. It seems like we have Letitia, Tamara, and Marie versus Latrice and Antoinette. Or it does suck that it's the older women versus the younger women. But maybe they'll shuffle things around as the season goes on.
So do you want to keep watching episodes as they shuffle things around?
I appreciate what this show is doing. I appreciate that OWN is mixing up the reality genre, that they're highlighting Jackson, Mississippi. I'll be honest, that's a part of the country I don't think about at all. I appreciate that they're trying to do their own take on The Real Housewives, a very popular franchise, but it is not the genre of television for me. So I would not watch again for that reason. I think people who like drama and reality TV, this is something worth watching and giving some time to see where these women can go. How do you feel?
If you want to watch a fun reality show based in Black entrepreneurship and Southern culture, then I would suggest Buried with the Bernards on Netflix. I recently discovered it and it is a delight. For me, I don't think I'm going to watch more episodes of Bell Collective. If you are someone, though, where discussion of business really interests you, because there are whole channels dedicated to it, clearly this is a genre for people, then maybe this show is for you. But it isn't for people, I think, who just broadly like reality TV and shows about interpersonal relationships and the highs and lows that can come with that.
That's fair. How about we shift to a new series that is also looking at the highs and lows of interpersonal relationships between women on Netflix?
Based on the novel by Kristen Hannah, Firefly Lane follows 30 years of friendship between talk show host Tully, played by Katherine Heigl, and divorced mom of troubled teen looking to re-enter her career, Kate, played by Sarah Chalk. And in this first episode, we flash back to when Tully and her mom, Cloud, played by Beau Garrett, first moved to Firefly Lane, and Tully gets to meet a young, shy Kate. We also see them in 1982 as they both want to launch their careers in journalism. And then back in the present, we see Kate trying to re-enter her career, and we see Tully trying to revitalize her career back to some serious journalism from the fluffy talk show topics she's been covering. So, Beach, how did you feel about it?
I'll just throw in, the present is 2003 in this show.
Yes.
I liked it more than I was expecting. What stood out to me is, even though Tully is the popular girl, the one with the tragic history growing up with her mom, and the one that we're meant to follow along with more, I felt like Kate was the more interesting character. Her awkward social life as a teen, going into this mom who is, of course, having conflicts with her teenage daughter. And then we get hints at her relationship drama now that she's divorced, and also flashbacks to seeing how that relationship started. Overall, I was more invested in seeing Kate try to build this new stage in her life versus Tully, who wants to revitalize her career. What were your first thoughts?
Tully even said it. Kate, at the end of the episode, has a PTA event, and she turns to Tully and she says that essentially she wishes they could trade places and Kate could gain some confidence ahead of this event. And Tully tells her that she is the brave one for going out there, for having a family, and for taking a leap of faith when you choose to partner with someone and have a child. And it's true in the world of this show. I wouldn't say that people who choose to have kids are braver than other people, But in the world of this show, it just offers more for Kate's story. Her daughter is rebelling. We see her divorced from Johnny, who was her crush when she first started her career, and we get to see the development of their relationship and those first few sparks. So it just is the more interesting story right now.
So what did you feel about Tully's life? They really put in a lot of flashbacks to show the struggles that her mother was going through while she was growing up, and then bringing it back to the present day setting to see how a lot of that is still impacting her life, even though her mother isn't around. But then contrasting that, where they clearly show Tully's always been the pretty popular girl who doesn't have to try hard to get things that she wants, besides a loving, caring mother.
Peach.
I mean, that's the one thing she couldn't get.
Their dynamic is the same throughout. The flashbacks and the return to present show a pattern in their relationship. Like you said, Tully is the star and Kate is like the supporting actor in Tully's life. But the one thing that Tully wants in the present, Kate has a home and love and a child. And in the past, Kate has a home and love and a family, and Tully can't access either of those things, no matter how talented she is at speaking and at journalism and how much of a star and an enigmatic personality she has. With that said, I do think that Tully's character is given a little bit of a disservice, and I hope we get to see some personal growth from her. Just because you're a single woman in your, I believe, 40s, doesn't mean you have to be very, very sad and feel very, very alone. So my hope is that maybe we get to see Tully start to show love toward herself and appreciate herself.
That would be nice.
It would be a nice character development, because it is a bit of a trope. When you see a single woman, especially of a certain age, you just know that she's going to be sad in the movie or in the show.
You're tired of seeing sad women.
Yes. Maybe I do want to see more women's brunches, more entrepreneurs, more people going out trying to get it for themselves. What a revelation. Maybe I am a Belle.
I have a question for you. Do you think Tully is a good friend to Kate?
No.
Oh, okay. It was very definitive.
I think that they're very supportive of each other and they love each other a lot, but I actually don't think either of them is a very good friend to the other. Kate is submissive to Tully, and I think she takes pride in that, but I think that it is building a little bit of resentment in her. And we see that in the flashbacks and in the present day 2003, where Tully takes center stage and it affects Kate, but she doesn't tell her. So you're doing your friend a disservice by not telling them if they're hurting your feelings. Mm-hmm. For Tully, how obtuse are you as to how your friend is doing, and how self-involved are you about your own needs that you can't look outside of yourself toward the one person that you said was truly kind and kind to you when you needed it most as a kid, especially?
I agree with you that they aren't good friends to each other. They definitely love each other. And I think they are both solving a problem that each of them aren't willing to address, where Tully has always been very selfish because she didn't get that love and care from her mother, so she's had to just take care of herself. And Kate offers that loving friendship, that supportive relationship she never had. Kate never formed those strong bonds with other people outside of her family. She didn't have the posse of friends. She didn't have the girl gang. And for better or worse, Tully accepts her being around. And that has been enough to satisfy Kate, even though Kate deserves better friends than that.
She gains confidence from Tully, too.
I mean, she gets to be next to the cool girl. I'm sure she gets like a little high from that, even though it doesn't really change anything about Kate's life.
I do have a light prediction before the ratings.
Tell me.
I don't think this is a very serious prediction. I think their friendship is going to be tested heavily. There's going to be some big reveals. We see in the flashbacks that Tully has this habit, let's say, trend of attracting men around her, including men that Kate has crushes on. And that is going to be tougher for Kate to take as a grown woman who is starting to find her own footing in the world. And I wonder if at the end of the show, they will be friends or close prior to, I'm sure, resolution in their relationship in the second season.
You see potential for some severe damage to this friendship.
And I see potential for a cliffhanger. You know, maybe we shouldn't be friends. Fade to black.
I would hate that.
I know, me too.
So are you going to watch till the end to see if there's a cliffhanger?
I will. This show is extremely popular on Netflix, and I get why. Would I say it's fantastic? No. But it's just a good show about relationships. I think Sarah Chalk and Katherine Heigl are acting really strongly in it. They themselves, through their performances, are compelling me, even if the story itself, to me, isn't that fresh or new.
I'm glad to hear that. This series, I would say, isn't really for me, or just straight up isn't for me. I did like it a lot more than I was expecting to. I think the acting was well done, and I like the complex relationships that they're building along with the history from those flashbacks. But I just don't see myself wanting to invest time into Kate and Tully's story. But now I have you who can give me episode by episode recaps and keep me up to date on where their friendship goes.
You'll have your reports in your inbox at least once a week.
Can you volunteer that service to our listeners as well? A weekly email summary, at least 1,000 words.
Okay, y'all. So let me bring this back. What we call this is a callback. I'm moving. I'm in the process of settling my things. So we'll see what happens with these summaries.
A 2-week break before you start. Got it. That is totally understandable. You can wait until March. Right, listeners? We can wait.
Okay. Well, Beach, where can people find more episodes of the Pilot Podcast as they bide their time?
Well, while you wait for MeToo's weekly recap emails, head to our website at thepilotpodcast.com and remember to subscribe on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
You can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at thepilotpod. You can send thoughts, feelings, show recommendations, and your Firefly Lane theories to askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.